I had intended to this evening to prepare us to go to Kanchipuram tomorrow. There won't be time to do all that. So I'll just speak something about where we were today. And primarily this is coming from the assistance of Nityamukta, your guide when you went to Venkatadri Hill yesterday. It seems like we're doing this eternally, like you just kind of lose track of time and it could go on forever, right? So, from what I'm about to describe to you, my impression from what I heard is a great personality like Ramanujacharya makes his imprint on history, and history looks different than before that great personality arrived. When we went to Kumara Kshetra, or Kumarahatta, we heard the description of how Ramanujacharya would, of the 108, from the writings of the Alvars, 108 deities that were especially important in all of India, he paid attention to those places. He went and visited those places, and where the deity worship standard had gone down, he presented his teachings, showed the Pancharatrika system of worship, and trained people, initiated people, qualified people to begin that worship, and that impression has endured in many places for so many generations later. Whatever that is, 900 years, something like that. And Tirupati is one of those places. But with some little assistance, we were being shown before these temples were Padmavati Temple or Govindaraj Temple, etc. They were, everything here was so Krishna-centered that it was called Krishna Nagar. Those of you that have been to Navadvip, the nearby kind of headquarters that governs over Navadvip is Krishna Nagar. This place was known as Krishna Nagar. And after some time it became Tirupati by the influence of Ramanujacharya. Not only the name of the place changed, but the principal significance of many of the places changed. Just like it's a standard that when a temple is built, the main deity is directly facing the main Gopuram. So at the Padmavati Temple, you saw how many throngs of people were eagerly waiting to take darshan of Padmavati, and they were, you know, okay, move along, move along, move along. And over on the side is the main deity before Padmavati came, or before that worship became established strongly by Ramanujacharya. It's Krishna Balaram. I mentioned that to some of the devotees, and they may have seen Krishna Balaram, and very amazing deity. As you look at the altar to our left, Balaram is sitting down and he's wearing his chappals because he was on pilgrimage. During the time, during the Kurukshetra battle and prior to that, Balaram went on a pilgrimage to different holy places. And one of them was Krishna Nagar. So his murti is, he's seated And he's relaxing because he's tired from his long journey, and he's wearing, you can see very clearly, they showed with the lamp, this is his wooden chappals. And there was Krishna in a yoga posture like this, giving his blessings with both hands, seated, not Krishna standing. To the side is Venu Krishna holding his flute. Krishna Balaram temple, main temple, main deity. And in the Govindaraj temple, the main deity opposite the main Gopuram is Parthasarathi. Maybe you heard them as they were saying the mantras, because they introduce the name by, or the deity by name, and invoke their name after some other mantras, but Parthasarathi. Krishna, the chariot driver of Arjuna. Is that the deity where there's a big sword? Did you see a big sword? Parthasarathi. And each one of the temples was Krishna, deity. Ramanujacharya came, saw that the standard of deity worship was not so good, and did what he did in many other places. And such a powerful person, by strong, pure devotion, brought that standard up, and it's been continued. Because of my health, I didn't make it to the place that you got little confusion going on. Srinivasa Mangalapuram. I like to describe something that's very amazing, and it goes back a long time, but it comes to a very recent time, literally present time. After Srinivas was married to Padmavati, recall that the very first day we were here. After their marriage, they went to the place where Agastya Muni had his ashram for some time. And that place is the very place that you went, where Srinivas Mangalapuram was. And he stayed there for 6 months. After some time, a deity of Srinivas was established. Going forward in time, to not so distant time, there was a Muslim king ruling in this area whose name was Hinder Ali. King Hinder Ali. And he wanted very much to attack Tirumala. In his army was one Hindu leader, not voluntarily, something very similar to Sanatan and Rupa Goswami being coerced by Nawab Hussein Shah. Either you join me or I'll eliminate all the Vaishnavas. That's what happened to Sanatan and Rupa Goswami. Systematically harass them and destroy them. So there was a Hindu king, Hindu administrator or leader in the king's army. And as he was approaching Tirupati, he told him, I don't know if you want to go there. They're keeping some pig up on top of the hill. Lord Varaha. Knowing that Muslims have, you know, they don't want to go near pigs. So he decided to not go there. Instead, he went to another place, a village, where they had a very large Vishnu temple, completely demolished the temple, and defaced the deity. And the effort of defacing the deity was the head, the face, the hands, the legs smashed, and that was good enough, and considered the deity was no longer acceptable, so they had ruined the deity. And then he was on his way next to Srinivas Mangalapuram. The devotees who were taking care of the deity received word. This wicked king, Hinder Ali, is on his way. So they did two things, short notice. They took the Utsav Murtis from the temple because they could carry them, and they took them to the Ram temple that we didn't go to. But there's a very large Gopuram, and I just learned this, that the Gopurams have some little area as it goes up, 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 like a little indented, kind of like a cave or a little space. So they put the deities in that space because they're portable. They put them up. And then the large deity, too big, huge deity, and short notice what to do. So they made some kind of a wall, stone wall, brick wall, in front of the deity. And when Hinder Ali came, he destroyed the temple, and he was looking everywhere for the deity, and he couldn't find the deity because the deity's behind a wall. And so he left. So the main deity, Srinivas, was protected. The Utsav Murti were on top of the Gopuram, but the Ram temple. And the temple itself was demolished. When we went to Sri Kalahasti just this morning, do you remember seeing this statue of this, like, very prominent, kind of effulgent, golden-colored statue of somebody with a sword, big king? The king is Krishna Deva Raja. Krishna Deva Raja. He was a great Vaishnava endorser, and he was responsible for much of a good portion of the development on top of Tirumala. And his kingdom extended as far as Karnataka. So the place where the Bali and Sugriva and was their kingdom, he also developed some things there. Very strong, powerful king, pictured with a sword, but a very soft heart for Vaishnava practices, and very actively promoted with his wealth and his devotion. You saw right behind, there was like an excavation pit. You see? Can you recall? It looked like a construction place where there was they're digging an excavation for a temple. What happened was, 1 year ago, one very tall Gopuram collapsed. 1 year ago. The whole thing just crashed down. And one person was killed and otherwise everyone was safe. But how inauspicious that a Gopuram, how strongly those things are built, it just collapsed. So when the temple was destroyed, where the Srinivas temple that you visited today was, it was neglected. And over a period of about 150 years, it just became overgrown. Where the smashed temple was and where the deity within the temple was became part of a jungle. Some time passed, and in Karnataka, a Madhva Brahmin, young man, had a dream. In the dream, his name was Sundara Raja Swami. In the dream, Srinivas appeared and told him, my deity form has been neglected for over 150 years. And I want you, you're a qualified person, to come to Andhra, find me, and reestablish my worship. And he awoke and told his mother and father, I had this wonderful dream. And they thought, no. This is just some ghostly disturbance. Don't pay any attention. So he obliged himself to his parents' request. After some time, a second dream, same thing happened. Only this time the deity said, I spoke to you once and you didn't come. What's wrong? I want you to restore my worship. I've selected you. This is a service I want you to do. Please do it. And he again informed his parents. And they thought, here, just it's a ghost coming to haunt you again. So they got some expert mantra chanting brahmanas and removing spells and, you know, all those things that people do sometimes. Third time, in the middle of the night, the deity was very angry and shouted at him and slapped him. You better come at once. I've given you this instruction. You're neglecting my instruction. And when he woke up, there was a mark on his face. So he didn't tell his parents. He did what sometimes devotees in ISKCON do. They just go and join the temple. Tell their parents later. That's what I did. They were okay. And he came to Andhra according to the indication given to him by Srinivas, and he searched, and it was all, at that time, not developed like it is now. It was very wild, forested, wild growth everywhere. And searching, he couldn't find. After some time, he became very thirsty. So he was now searching for water to quench his thirst. And one small boy came and asked him, my dear sir, what are you doing in this wild part of the forest? Is there something that I can help you with? Yes, I'm very thirsty. Can you find me some water that's suitable for drinking? So he took him to a lake, and the lake water, drinking it, was very sweet. It's the water that was used for the worship of the deity of Srinivas. So he began to think. The Lord is inspiring him from within. This seems to be a very special place. Maybe the deity is somewhere nearby. But all it was jungle growth, so he didn't see any direct evidence. He asked some local village people, kindly assist me. The Lord appeared in a dream 3 times and instructed me to find him. Please help me. So, certainly we'll try to help you. And they searched and searched. And together, the combination of his searching and their searching came up with nothing. By inspiration, he saw on the other side of this lake a very thick growth of trees. So he suggested, let's cross the lake and go over to that growth of trees and see, maybe there's something inside. So they went inside and removed some of the thick foliage, and they could see the remains of a destroyed temple. So he was feeling inspired. But when they got inside, this got closer to the temple and, you know, searching, nothing. They found the wall. So the village people said, we've invested all the time that we can spare in helping you. We don't seem to be making any progress. This was something, but this is probably not that place. He said he made this request one more effort because I'm being inspired in this way. Let us see if we can break the wall and see what's behind the wall. And they broke the wall and they saw the deity. So he was... Now he has the next challenge, how to restore the worship of the deity. So he informed the local king of what had happened. His dream, his coming, the wall, the deity. Please help me in some way to establish a proper place of worship. So with the local king's help, a simple arrangement for the worship of the deity was restored. Then he had another dream in which Srinivas informed him of the Utsav Murti as in where they were. By that time, through passage of time, the local archaeology commission had found these Murti forms in the Gopuram, and they thought they were like, you know, archaeological relics, so they put them in the museum. But Sundara Raja Swami knew differently by Srinivasa's own instruction. So he went to the archaeological folks and said, may I have these deities to worship? And he explained. They said, no. This belongs to the archaeology department. I'm sorry. Whatever your dream says, we're not going to go by that. And he came again and came again, and they said, well, we'll make castings like them, and you can take the castings like them, but this is a rare archaeological finding. We can't let them go. Just by his devotion and persistence, he eventually persuaded them. They gave him the Utsav Murtis, and now the Utsav Murti and the original Murti, fulfilling Srinivasa's instruction. One of my godbrother, Bhadri Narayan Prabhu's favorite sayings is, no good deed goes unpunished. Meaning you try to do something, or you do something that's with good intention, and no good deed goes unpunished. He was dedicating himself in a very selfless way to the worship of the deity, finding both sets of deities, establishing the deity worship. He didn't have support of a team of Brahmins like we've seen at some of these temples. He was just from another state and trying to do what he could do. The government had an issue. They were saying, you're this Swami from some other state, and you've come here and you've taken over control of this temple, and you know, who are you anyways? And, you know, we're the archaeological division, and we should be in charge, and the government should be in charge. He said, it came under the order of the Supreme Lord, and that's my authority. There was a court case dealing with the issue. And there was a government officer that came and informed Sundara Raja Swami, look, basically, you know, like, move aside. Here comes the government. Get out of the way, because here we come. And, you know, you're a small guy, we're a big guy. You know, like, one of those. And he said, you can take a look inside and see what I'm doing. I'm simply serving the deity. So he went inside, took darshan, came back out trembling. No one knows what happened. And he said, Sundara Raja Swami, the deity is yours. You're doing such a nice job. The government gives you full blessing to continue worshiping the deity. We wash our hands of any claim of the deity. Nobody knows what happened. Something happened. Lord Nrisimha showed his form or something. And he got the message. I mentioned the other day about Vaikanasa Brahmins. You recall that discussion? So the Vaikanasa Brahmins are both very expert in certain procedures of worship, and they're also very strict, and you can say proud in their strictness of standards. So this goes into to recent time, where the son of Sundara Rajaswami, who's present today in his 90s, described what I'm about to describe to you now, to Nityamukta, that he wanted very much, from his childhood, he was trained by his father how to worship the deity, Srinivas. And he followed, he followed very carefully. He had the similar devotion to his father. He imbibed the mood of love and devotion for the deity that his father had. Yeah, there was some detail I've missed, which is the affection that he had for the deity and the affection for the local people that they had for him was unbreakable. Both. So his son's name was Raghavendra Swami, and Raghavendra wanted to have the same standard of worship as happens up on top of the hill. So one officer connected with the TTD visited and encouraged him, please establish this worship and I'll help you. I'll help you provide the brahmanas and you do all the same, because the deity is the same. Same feature, same size, same. Because it's the same. Srinivas spent 6 months after his marriage here. So Raghavendra had that desire to establish that same standard. But there were some rituals that he didn't know, and the Sri Vaishnavas also didn't know, that the Vaikanasa Brahmanas knew. So it was a very deep devotional desire that all the rituals be done, in the certain ones that he just didn't know how to do. So devotionally, it was a difficulty for him. The TTD got involved and held a little meeting where Raghavendra, the Vaikanasa Brahmanas, and whoever else was supposed to be present, they had this discussion. You're in charge of this temple, and you have as a desire to see to the pleasure of your Lord. Correct? That's your desire. Exclusive desire. These Vaikanasa Brahmanas, they're very strict because others that do not know their rituals and routines have touched the deity. As far as they're concerned, they won't come near the temple, near the deity, unless those persons don't touch the deity anymore. For the Utsav Murti, when the Utsav deity leaves and the worship goes outside the temple, you can have everything to do. But if anything, any touching of the deity, they won't even come here. So our suggestion is that let them do the worship of the main deity, you do the festival deity worship, but you can't go on the altar and touch the deity. And he began crying because it's the Lord of his life and he's torn between what he wants as nice standard of their worship and personally involved in their worship, which part of which he didn't have the knowledge and information how to do. So he couldn't agree. He didn't say no, but he didn't say yes either. So then they repeated their their points. They laid the whole thing out. If you want your Lord's satisfaction, then accept. They'll worship the deity and you'll do the festivals. So finally he agreed. Then they said, there's going to be a problem here, and that is, the village people love you. And if they think that you've been pushed out against your will, we're going to have a riot. And so you have to sign with your own hand a letter that says, I will not worship the deity because. And with great difficulty, with his own hand, he wrote such a letter and handed it over to the TTD. The Vaikanasa Brahmanas had to, in their way of thinking, reestablish, reinstall the deity because the deity had been contaminated by the presence of Madhva Vaishnava and Sri Vaishnavas who had touched the deity, so they had to reinstall the deity. And for a period of 6 months or something like that, Raghavendra was every night having a dream of worshipping the deity, touching his lotus feet, all the things that he had done since childhood. And waking up with grief. He wasn't actually able to do this. So one day when the festival deity was taken back to be placed by the altar, he wanted to enter and touch the feet of the deity. And the Vaikanasa Brahmana stopped him before he got onto the altar and said, basically, get out of here. You touch the deity and we're out of here. Because you're not fit to touch the deity. You're not a Vaikanasa Brahmana like us. And with devotional tears, he accepted and just offered his prayers to the deity from a distance. But it didn't stop there. The Vaikanasa Brahmanas went and complained to the main chief organizer of the temple up top, the TTD, whatever his title is. His name was Govinda, and he came down to address the confrontation that was going on, the dispute. And hearing of the situation, he became like Nrisimhadev. And for 15 minutes, this is recent time, he blasted the Vaikanasa Brahmanas, indicating the difference between their fastidious attention to the details of how they do the worship and lining their pockets with the rupees that they had gained by doing pujas for people and so on and so on, and not having one hint of a trace of interest in really what is for the pleasure of the deity. And on the other hand, Raghavendra and his father are so pure in devotion, neither of them having any interest in anything material. They've invited you here just so that you could serve the deity nicely, sacrificing his heart and soul. He is the true Vaishnava. You people are nonsense, just and on and on and on and on and on. Recent time. And then he went to Raghavendra, who was beside himself with anxiety, not being hurt by unpleasant things other people had to say, but by the inability to worship the deity that was his life and soul. And Govinda took the position with Raghavendra that in this lifetime, it may turn out that with this body being born in a different place and not having the understanding these Vaikanasas have, you may not touch the deity with this body. They may be able to check you in that way, because I can't help. There's this document, and therefore there's an order from the TDD, and I'm under their order, so I can't violate that. Otherwise, I would push you at once to the feet of the deity and keep you there, because that's where you belong. That's your quality of devotion. But I can't do that. I don't have the authority to do that. But I can say that from your heart, no one, they may check your body, but they can't check your heart. And with your heart, you'll go and embrace the deity and serve the deity and to your heart's content, decorate the deity and do that within your heart. And no one can check that. You're the true devotee of Srinivas. So this is the Raghavendra Swami is 90-something years old and living nearby the Srinivas temple today. So sometimes devotees ask, during the course of this yatra, I've been asked the question by several persons, Maharaj, is it really possible to come to this standard of devotion in our present age? Isn't it like, you know, that's something back then and today is today and they're very different. And there's no limitation with bhakti as far as one's birth, the time. It's transcendental is transcendental. It has nothing to do with the material circumstances of one's life, positive or negative or mixed. It has to do with the openness of heart and the willingness to enter into a loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're attracted in our minds to loving relationships. We want, the world is filled with it. Whether it's, so the object and the way in which that tendency is directed, it's a free will choice, and it has very much to do with the association we keep. One of the stories I didn't tell yesterday was one of the concluding passages of Ananta Acharya's life. He was going to leave this world, and many of his devotees, his disciples, came from all around to be with him. And he gave some very wonderful parting instructions. He told a story of Shaunaka Rishi was in the forest with some sages, and they went to visit the hermitage of another sage. In the course of their travel through the forest, there was a torrential downpour of rain. Too much rain. And so they were seeking shelter somewhere. And they found, in the course of their travel through the forest, the residence of a hunter. The hunter happened to not be there. He was out hunting when the torrential rain came. And when they were sitting in his cottage, the hunter's cottage, he had a pet parrot. And the pet parrot began speaking. And the pet parrot began speaking with foul language and criticizing this one, criticizing that one, criticizing this one, criticizing that one. And it wasn't saying Polly want a cracker. He was saying, you know, criticism, vilification. It was too much. It was his residence, the residence of the hunter. So they just went back out in the storm and left. And the parrot followed them and kept speaking his bad words, vilifications, criticisms. They couldn't take it because they're saints. They're not accustomed to hearing that kind of sound vibration language, although it's just a parrot. They continued nonstop until they reached the hermitage of the other sage that they had intended to visit. And as soon as they went into the sage's house, there was also a parrot. And the parrot was speaking very nicely and speaking very humble words and words of appreciation and gratitude and like that. And Ananta Acharya said, how is this possible? It turns out that the two parrots both had the same parents. But one parent, through unwholesome association, developed one kind of quality. Another parent, through elevated association, developed another quality. So he quoted this story specifically to indicate the importance of the quality of association that we pick or select. And by taking the right kind of association, our quality can transform. And taking the wrong kind of association, our quality can degrade. So how important it is to stay always in the association of devotees and very carefully guard against non-devotee association. Same as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching, we find in Rupa Goswami, the principal characteristic of a Vaishnava is asat sanga tyag, a Vaishnava achar, to take the association of saintly personalities. So that's what we're doing on this yatra, association of nice devotees, of followers of Srila Prabhupada, and hearing the wonderful glories of past and even, in this case, current devotees, whose singular focus is pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in different roles or different relationships or different executions of those duties, the prayer, the wish, the desire is that those elevated qualities become our qualities through that association. We can make advancement in the path of pure devotional service by this method.